Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, March 12, 2015. Opposition parties blame the rebels and the government for failing to sign a peace deal.
We call upon all stakeholders in the country to rise up to the challenge facing our beleaguered country. It is only us who will save our people.
And an analyst says Sudan's future depends on an inclusive dialogue.
The call was made by President Bashir at a time of acute crisis for his government. That crisis, to some degree, has ameliorated.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to Addis Ababa for the latest. A United Nations Security Council delegation arrived in Addis Ababa today to meet with the African Union Peace and Security Council. The permanent representative of France to the United Nations, François Delattre, is leading the delegation, which is expected to discuss the collapsed South Sudanese peace talks, along with the situation in Central African Republic. Meanwhile, Ethiopia's new foreign ministry spokesman says the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, plans to resume peace talks between the South Sudan warring parties next month. Tewelde Mulugatha says there will be a new mechanism to review the talks and nearly 15 months of violence. Mulugatha told reporters at a news conference in Addis Ababa that the peace talks will resume with representatives from the African Union, the UN Security Council, the Troika, which comprised of United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway. The chief spokesman for the rebels at the Addis talks, Port Kang Chol, confirmed to South Sudan in Focus that the talks will start in April. However, Kang did not specify an exact date. He says his group is waiting for official communication from the IGAD mediators. An alliance of political opposition parties in South Sudan today described the two warring parties as failures who lack the ability to end the ongoing crisis. The alliance says it is time the South Sudanese stakeholders take the bull by the horns, but declined to specify any new ideas for resolving the crisis. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
At a news conference in Juba today, the opposition alliance presented its position in a three-page document signed by representatives of 18 political parties. The alliance says President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar's self-interest led to the failure of the peace talks in Addis Ababa last week. Martin Aligo is a representative in the alliance.
We call upon all stakeholders in the country to rise up to the challenge facing our beleaguered country. It is only us who will save our people. Let us lead our serious and create homegrown solutions rather than allow our country to be held hostage by potential interests.
But Aligo did not specify what those homegrown solutions should be. Aligo says the 15-month-long conflict has led to deteriorating humanitarian conditions that have displaced about 100,000 people who continue to stay in UN-run camps and tens of thousands of others who fled the country during the violence.
We would like to caution the warring parties that while they are engaged in a dangerous brinkship, our country is in the grips of war that threatens to destroy it by real threat of external intervention.
The alliance says a UN trusteeship is being floated for the first time for an independent country because of the failure of the two sides to reach a peace deal. It says to avoid this scenario, all South Sudanese must pressure the warring parties to put the country above their personal interests and give peace a chance. Lam Akol, the head of the opposition alliance, says the leaders of the two warring parties cannot lead an interim government.
We actually say that when you say that they can lead the interim period, we are saying now no, they cannot, because they have proved that they are not to the level expected by the people of South Sudan.
Michael Makueluet, the South Sudan Minister of Information, had this to say in response to Akol's comments.
That is their opinion, and we respect their opinion, but that is not true. The government and the rebels are trying their level best to bring peace, and because we are not looking for a hasty peace. We are not looking for a fragile peace that will just be signed and tomorrow it crumbles. We are looking for a just durable and lasting peace that will not take us back to war.
The peace talks were adjourned last week after the two sides failed to reach a deal by IGAD's deadline on Thursday. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wodo in Juba.
We now turn to affairs in Sudan. A respected international think tank says prospects are very dim for holding an inclusive national dialogue in Khartoum ahead of elections there next month. The International Crisis Group says the government in Khartoum appears to be reluctant to implement a promise made by President Omar al-Bashir more than a year ago to revive a national dialogue to try to resolve Sudan's political and economic challenges. VOA's fellow Lucy Pony has this report.
EJ Hagendon is ICG's Deputy Program Director for Africa. He says widespread protests sparked by economic hardship and the lifting of oil subsidies prompted President Bashir to make the call for a national dialogue. Mr. Bashir made the call for the talks in January last year. But since then, Hagendon says things have changed.
The call was made by President Bashir at a time of acute crisis for his government. That crisis, to some degree, has ameliorated, and now he and his colleagues don't feel as much pressure to engage in reform as they did a year ago.
The government in Khartoum did convene roundtable discussions on the proposed national dialogue. Those discussions were held in April 2014 and brought together more than 90 representatives of different political parties. The National Dialogue Committee was set up as a result of the roundtable discussions. It granted political parties the right to hold rallies. But at the same time, a government paramilitary group, the Rapid Support Forces, was deployed in and around Khartoum to crack down on political opposition and media. Hagendon says opposition leaders, including Sadiq al-Mahdi of the National Umma Party and Ibrahim al-Sheikh of the Sudanese Congress Party, were imprisoned under the new crackdown.
This is one of a number of initiatives by the government that leads to a less conducive environment for inclusive national dialogue. And clearly it is an attempt by hardliners within the ruling party to try to restrict debate about what reforms are necessary to put Sudan a peaceful and sustainable path.
Hagendon says an inclusive, thorough and comprehensive dialogue is the only solution to Sudan's multiple crises. He says Sudan's internal conflict is a political one and all the different political and armed actors should be involved in addressing the grievances that have been driving rebellion inside the country for decades. Hagendon says what the government needs to do now is
to hold inclusive preparatory meetings that would lead to the national dialogue. We've also made some suggestions as to whether or not it is wise for the government to push the elections that are scheduled for April in such an aggressive way. We've also encouraged the opposition parties and civil society to also do more to develop a joint common position that would put them in a better stead to negotiate in a competent manner with the national government. And last but not least, we do think more progress needs to be made on separate peace negotiations that are going on in respects to the conflict in Darfur and the conflict in the two areas, that is Blue Nile and Southern Kordofan.
Although many people in Sudan and in the international community are skeptical that Mr. Bashir's government will allow an inclusive dialogue to go ahead, Hagendon thinks the ruling National Congress Party could still be brought around to see reason.
The NCP is a very large umbrella party. There are reformist elements and there are hardline elements, and we believe that is still being debated. We do think that most people in government recognize that some reforms are necessary. What really is at issue is whether or not those reforms will be enough to satisfy the grievances that many people in the peripheries and even some people in the urban centers continue to have vis-a-vis the government.
ICG says with mainstream opposition opting to boycott the elections, saying they were not consulted in amendments to the electoral laws in June 2014, the elections planned for April this year may deepen and intensify conflicts. President Bashir is running for re-election in the April elections. He is the only sitting head of state wanted by the International Criminal Court for alleged war crimes. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony.
From Khartoum, we move to Jonglei. Officials from the Greater Pibor administrative area today provided details about a new road project that began recently. They say the Central Equatorial State Government is helping to construct a 36-kilometer road that will connect Greater Pibor to Central Equatoria. For VOA News, Jacob Achiek has more from Juba.
Greater Pibor area officials said the new constructed project was launched by the government of Central Equatoria 3 weeks ago and is progressing well. Engineers have so far laid the foundation for about 25 kilometers of new road. Sam David, Information Minister for the Greater Pibor Administration Area, GPAA, said the 35-kilometer road is start in Jabor, a village located near Mangalapayam in Central Equatorial State, and end up in a place called Aying, a river border between Central Equatoria and GPAA. David said the road will eventually extend all the ways to Pibor.
The road constructed by Central Equatoria government up to a place called Aying. We need to make some bridge there. This is the main road which is connected to Greater Pibor and Juba. And also we would like to construct the road which is connected seven counties.
David says so far the only financial support they have received for the project have come from the Central Equatorial Government. He said the first step is grading the road, then it will be paved. Pibor Deputy Chief Administrator for Administration, Joseph Lelimoy, who visited a construction site 3 days ago, said GPAA has reached another agreement with Central Equatoria officials to construct another road connecting Eastern Equatoria with the Greater Pibor area in the future.
The road is new. It was not existing before. And you know, the Greater Pibor has been disconnected from capital city of South Sudan in terms of roads. And this is one of the challenges that was facing Jonglei State because there is some of the areas which is lacking the infrastructure, especially the road.
Lolimoy said the road works will be carried out in two phases.
Phase one is to construct the road from Juba up to Aying. And there they will construct a bridge, a slight bridge. Aying is a river, and during the rainy season, it will be difficult for the vehicles to cross.
Central Equatoria Information Minister Suba Samuel said seeing the Kiir administration and former rebel leader David Yao Yao, now administrator of the Greater Pibor administrative area, have signed a peace deal, development can begin.
The government has pledged to work together with them in areas of capacity building, particularly the establishment of Pibor administrative area, in specific areas of education, health, and infrastructure. So the whole funding and financing of this project and the equipments are all equipments of the government of Central Equatoria State.
Right now, the only road connecting Pibor with Bor is impassable due to poor infrastructure and is only usable during the dry season. Lelimoy said Jonglei and the GPAA government will work together to make sure that road is accessible during the rainy season. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, women in South Sudan learn a new trade. Find out what that is right after this break.
South Sudan in Focus listeners can find us on the following shortwave frequencies: 11900, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what benefits come from your country being part of a regional bloc? Example, ECOWAS or COMESA.
The benefits are natural because belonging to a sub-regional bloc or a regional bloc opens the country to a bigger market, which means that a goods produced in that country can sell in a wider market, and movements of persons and goods is freer.
One thing I should be very sure of is that people will get education. That's the key. That's the most important key.
Normally, the foreigners from East Africa, some came to do their business. They can able to educate their children. Even in South Sudan, the South Sudanese can send their children to school and get educated.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. In many parts of Africa, seed production has long been dominated by big government monopolies, leaving few options for small-scale farmers and putting more obstacles in the way of food production. But as Hilary Hiller reports for VOA from Nairobi, a new initiative hopes to change all that by enhancing African farmers' access to improved seeds.
Edward Mabaya grew up in Zimbabwe, one of 10 children. His father was a construction worker, and his mother farmed their land. But Mabaya's story isn't the one of rural poverty many people think of as typical, and he says his family owes their success to seeds.
This is at a time when new varieties were just coming into Zimbabwe, and you saw this huge uptake of adoption by smallholder farmers that resulted in very high yields. And with that money, my parents were able to send us to school.
In fact, all 10 children made it as far as university. Now Mabaya is a researcher at Cornell University in New York, working on a project he hopes will give other small farmers the same chance his parents had. He heads the African Seed Access Index, or TASAI, launched Thursday, which monitors the continent's commercial seed sector to try to get more improved seeds into the hands of small-scale farmers. Africa's seed value chain is complex, says Mabaya, and TASAI tries to identify its weak points to pinpoint why access is a problem. Improved seeds, which have been systematically bred for certain characteristics, are widely used in the West. But until the 1980s and 90s, Africa's seed sector was run by government monopolies, and since then, private seed breeders have been slow to take off. This means that most farmers still use the same seeds they've been saving for generations, says George Bigirwa of the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, or AGRA. He says there aren't enough improved seeds in Africa to supply the millions of farmers who need them.
I remember when before AGRA came in some countries like Burkina Faso, like Mali, even Ghana, there were no seed companies. At least today, you have an average of about 6 to 8 seed companies in place. However, looking at the amount of seed each company produces, that is still very little.
In terms of productivity, he says, improved seeds can make a world of difference for a small farmer.
The difference is day and night. If you look at some of these traditional varieties, the yield potential is very low. For instance, maize, at most farmers can get 1 ton or 1.5. But if they use these improved varieties, which have got disease resistance, some of them are drought tolerant, you can get 5 to 6 tons per hectare.
This can be enough to help lift subsistence farmers out of poverty, explains Mabaya. Not only that, he adds, but new factors like climate change mean that some older seed varieties aren't performing as well as they used to.
Farmers are facing challenges that they did not have to deal with, you know, only, you know, 10 years ago. So some of the varieties that farmers were growing are not doing well anymore. We have also new diseases that have come into the market, and you need new varieties that can resist some of these diseases.
Africa's seed industry still has a long way to go, says Mabaya. But with access to the same agricultural technology the rest of the world is using, he says, there's no reason why the continent shouldn't be able to feed itself. Hilary Hewler for VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Sources in Somalia are reporting an apparent U.S. drone strike against a vehicle carrying officials from militant group Al-Shabaab. Somali officials and individuals close to Al-Shabaab tell VOA Somali Service that the drone attacked a vehicle late today outside the southwestern town of Bardhere. According to sources in the region, the targeted car belongs to Aidan Garar, a top official in Al-Shabaab Security Service. Garar is believed to have links with the gunman who attacked Kenya's Westgate Mall in 2013, killing more than 60 people. Sources tell VOA the vehicle was destroyed in the drone strike. It was not immediately clear whether Garar was killed. Iraqi forces and militiamen are tightening their grip onto Crete in an attempt to take over control of the city from Islamic State militants. Rebel gunmen and bombs have slowed progress as military and volunteer fighters push toward the center of the ISIS stronghold from two directions this week. Commanders of the offensive say the operation, now in its second week, is progressing slowly but deliberately. And finally, Nigerian government sources say citizens from Britain, South Africa, and Ukraine are in northeastern Nigeria to train soldiers battling insurgent group Boko Haram. The comment follows reports that white mercenaries are in the region assisting the military. Those reports have not been confirmed. The sources say the foreign advisors came along with military equipment Nigeria purchased from South Africa, Russia, and Ukraine as part of its offensive against the Boko Haram insurgent group. Speaking on condition of anonymity, the source tells VOA Nigeria bought a new tank, trucks, bridge-building equipment, and aircraft. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
As part of our occasional series looking at the changing role of women in South Sudan, in honor of International Women's History Month, Mungume Debs Rakarinj met two women in Juba, who against all odds and cultural traditions became successful auto mechanics. Here's the story.
Let's go, baby.
Yeah. At the University of Juba Auto Garage, 18-month-old Esther Samuel runs to keep up with her mother like any little children would do. Her day is brightened by not only her mother, but about a dozen clients and other mechanics. Samuel's mother, 26-year-old Elizabeth Jacob, is one of two women auto mechanics in this garage. Her dream was to study and become an engineer, but after completing primary 8 at age 18, her parents told her there were no more funds to support her education, and she was ready to be married off. But Elizabeth had another idea. Through encouragement from her brother, in 2008 she was able to join an auto mechanic school in Yei, where she graduated with a diploma.
First he told me I should go for a driving course, and then the course was both driving and mechanic, so I choose them both.
Culture and traditional practices in South Sudan are largely to blame for low levels of women literacy, which is now at about 16%, as opposed to 40% for males. In most cases, girls are not allowed to attend school or higher levels of education, and are forced to marry by Elizabeth's age or even younger. Typically, parents marry off their girls for a lucrative dowry. Boys' education is seen as far more important than girls' education. So if a family cannot afford to send all their children to school, the boys will be sent to school and the girls will work at home. The other female mechanic working in this garage is 28-year-old Diane Andrew, a single mother who decided to fix cars because she couldn't earn enough from selling tea. Diane and Elizabeth are paid £1,400 per month. Diane uses her money to support herself and her 8-year-old son. Elizabeth has been able to buy a plot of land and hopes to build a house for herself. Joseph Akech James arrives at the garage to have his oil changed. He says the only person he wants to work on his car is Elizabeth, for a good reason.
When you first open here, and then I leave the car first to cool. First, it's very hot. Winters get cold, and then up.
ما هي بيشتغل كويس هي مكانيكية.
James says women mechanics are more careful than men. He says they're also more trustworthy. Women cannot remove your functioning spare parts and replace them with old spare parts, says James. Women are very reliable. And there are other advantages of women playing a profession dominated by men. You can get moral support. Fellow mechanic Jacob Charles helps Elizabeth's baby when she tries to reach for her mother, who is busy changing oil. Charles says when the mother is busy, they have to try to play with the baby so she doesn't disrupt her work. He says she's like our own, and we think by staying here with us, she may also eventually become a mechanic. Elizabeth Jacob says, despite her full-time job as a mechanic, she still fulfills her other responsibilities as a mother and a housewife.
Yeah, when I wake up in the morning, I first clean my compound and prepare tea for the children, and then I come to work. From there, I go home at 4 to the market, and then I go and make food for the children also.
Elizabeth's husband, 44-year-old Samuel Alcangelo, also a mechanic, is aware of the challenges his wife faces each day. Alcangelo says he met Elizabeth here at the garage when she was already a mechanic. He says he knows how demanding the job can be sometimes. He says a woman does have to do all the cooking, so he helps in that way. The United Nations has said women bear the biggest burden of war, as they do in South Sudan's conflict. Whereas men engage in active combat, it is women like Elizabeth who not only take care of their families at home, but support their families by working outside the home, and in so doing, help in nation building. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Take My Love. It is free by South African superstar Yvonne Chaka Chaka. we have been listening to South African superstar Yvonne Chaka Chaka with that song, Take My Love, It Is Free. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Please tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.